Hi, welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm joined by a special guest today, Warren Bird. Warren, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you. I have listened almost since the beginning of the series and learned so much from you and Jay Kranda and DJ Chuang before that.
Yeah, well, we've been big fans of yours for some time, and I appreciate all of your ongoing feedback and encouragement. If you could just let our listeners know that might not be aware of you, who you are and what you do and a little bit about your background.
I work for Leadership Network, and we host. We have a special page dedicated to, I think, 208 episodes so far of Social Media Church. I oversee the research department. We're primarily an organization about networking entrepreneurial, innovative pastors together to share best ideas to move from idea to implementation. And I'm the one who helps provide numbers or logistics or trends, kind of the harder stuff along the way. And I have a great time, and I've gotten to co-author 29 books along the way about different subjects that affect church life, from senior pastor healthy succession to healthy mergers to multi-site and so forth.
I love it. And I have over the years read so much of the research and appreciate the work you do. So in the 29 books, is there one that you would say, this is my favorite book that I wish every pastor or leader would read?
Oh, it's always the next one.
Yeah,
whatever it is.
And what is the next one? Are you able to share what the next one is?
Yes, How to Break Growth Barriers, which is actually an expanded version, the first time I've ever done it, of a book that came out in 1994. One of the first that I did with Carl George was at the time, heyday of, there was the How to Break the 200 Barrier, How to Break the 400 Barrier, How to Break the 800 Barrier. And pastors, this was all new insight to how do you do that? And I had said to Carl George, who was the mind and main speaker behind that, what if we take the best of all this and turn it into a book? And then the publisher recently said, you know, guys, your book is doing great. If you just update it, you know, like take out the bus ministry illustrations and bring in social media and other things, we'll introduce it to a new generation. So that the publication date is April 2017.
That's awesome. Well, I'll be excited to read that as well. That's fascinating. And I just got back from the eChurch summit that PushPay put on, talking about a lot of these things. And I think it's so healthy for churches to really analyze and then learn from other churches that have hit certain barriers and what those opportunities are to break through. Let's talk a little bit about the trends you're seeing. So you have a really unique perspective on the church as a whole through all the research that you do. And let's talk social media specifically. What would you say over the last 5 years is the core trends around social media? What are the things that you've really kind of caught your eye and that churches are really digging into in this area of social media?
Well, I would say listen to all the Neil Smith, Jay Kranda podcasts because you really highlight it. Let me underscore a few things. Number one, that it's incredibly underutilized by most churches. The church I go to podcast, but puts the sermon online so you can listen to it anytime. So when I travel, it's great. But I live in the New York metro area. So when we have a snow day or other day when attendance is way down, the next weekend, the pastor says, you know, hey, those of you who missed, does he think to mention, and did you listen online, you know, to the message? No. Does he mention, and you could give online too? No. And when you talk to the media ministry folks and say, well, you know, how many people listened to that last message or listened, you know, when we had the snowstorm, they're like, I don't know. I've never done the Google Analytics on it. So there's just so much out there that could be tapped into. Likewise, just last Sunday, we had a newcomer meet and greet and ask different newcomers, how did you hear about the church? And there were certain, most, as in all churches, come on the arm of a friend at the invitation of a friend. But a certain percentage, I found you on the internet. You know, I found, could we dig there and say, well, what did you learn? You know, what was it? How did you find us? You know, and whatever it is, can we do more of that?
Yeah. I love it. I love you speak that it being underutilized. Is there anything that you have seen trend-wise that gives you hope and optimism that's changing? Or do you feel like the church has just stayed stagnant in being behind the times?
Now, historically, the church embraced the internet at the front of the curve. Let's go back, way back when radio came out, the airwaves were of the devil and all. And you'd have a pioneer like R.R. Brown in Omaha, Nebraska that said, no, you know, I'm going to use this to preach the gospel. And thousands came to Christ. And somewhat reluctantly, churches said, wow, we can use this newfangled thing. Well, likewise, when television came out and Billy Graham, said, no, let's put the Crusades on television. That was a big deal. Billy Graham spoke to Robert Schuller and said, you should take your telecast and put it on television. Likewise, you know, movies with a clear theme of focusing on new life in Christ and how that can happen. Reluctance. But when the internet came out, Christians, in a way, were like ready. It's like, no, we're going to embrace this one. We're going to use it for good. We're going to make the best of it.
That's awesome. I love it. So one of the things I hear from pastors specifically is that sometimes it's just chaos though. We're going to get on social media or we're going to get on the internet, but we don't know what we're doing. We're going to figure it out as we go. As a research guy, you understand the importance of analytical data that really helps you kind of create measures of success of how you know this is working. How would you tell a pastor is asking you, I don't know if this is really worth it. What do I measure? How would you advise a pastor to really see the win in social media and the measurable result?
I think the pastor has to be convinced first. I was in a church on Palm Sunday once, and the pastor said, in effect, I know most times we ask you to put your phones and everything away lest it be a distraction, unless you look at your Bible on it. But today I want, we're about to have the offering, I want everybody to take your phone out. And up on the wall, you're going to see different tweets, different things you could post. Yeah. They give our Easter service times and some of the things we're doing and the name of the guests, somebody that we're going to interview for how they came to Christ. And I want you right now, I'm going to say a prayer that God would bring someone to mind that you need to invite. Mm. And I want you to text them right now or whatever it is you do. Reach out and invite him. So I happened to see that pastor a couple of weeks later after Easter. And I said, so how'd it go? And he said, it was our best Easter yet. So I guess you're going to be doing that next Palm Sunday as well. Yes. And that's he laughed awesome. About the same way.
Yeah. I think I love that. And I think one, there's nothing like stories to communicate those results. But I think two, as you see immediate results, and that's one of the opportunities on social media. I remember when we launched online church, a community Bible church about 6 years ago now, we were in a room and Robert Emmett was open to the idea. He was very entrepreneurial, but he needed to see proven results immediately. And so literally we started an online campus in about a week. We all updated our Facebook status. We had about 600 people log in. And he was like, we just started a 600 person church with a few clicks. And those immediate results for him were was enough to make the next investment, which then led to other results and other things. But I love that. Find some immediate results. And if the pastor doesn't embrace it, you're really going to be spinning your wheel. So if you're a youth pastor trying to push it, the pastor, I think, needs to embrace it.
And by that, we mean the senior pastor owning it, not the senior pastor doing it, running it. But in a church, and it depends on what your size as a church, whether this is a volunteer or a staff person, but there has to be someone who wakes up every day and thinks, oh, you know, Instagram is growing. How can we use that? Oh, you know, this one is in decline. You know, let's drop our account. But the worst thing you can do is like, launch all these things and then nobody keeps them up. And then people check out the church or whatever. And they find that, you know, here it is, we're approaching Christmas and it still advertises the Easter service or whatever else that just smacks of you being hopelessly outdated. And that's actually discourages people from being involved. So if you're going to do it, there's got to be someone who builds a team, owns the responsibility and runs with it, and then receives a vision encouragement from this pastoral staff.
I love that. So one of the things that I hear a lot as well, and as I drove that at Community Bible Church, and I think that really spoke to what the work I did there, and that Robert didn't even have a Twitter account. He didn't have Facebook. He was disconnected from social media, but he believed in the power of what could be. So he was my number one supporter, but I had to build the system. So I would say just, you know, allow my, you know, proof of concept to work of if you've got something that's going to hustle and build it, when you have that leader, that support from the top, they don't have to run it, but they do have to support it for it to be effective. One of the things you hear a lot, though, is that social media is unhealthy. So Simon Sinek has recently come out, a lot of videos of him saying, you know, if you have somebody under 15 years old, it's like a drug. It's like an addiction at an early age. I had church members at Community Bible Church tell me, how dare you encourage us to be on Facebook? People are having affairs on Facebook. It's unhealthy. And then pastors develop an addiction to social media as well. Or it's as if you can't ever disconnect from ministry when you need to be home and present for your family. What advice do you have for those and those pastors that would say social media is unhealthy? We should just ignore it because we're creating a bad addiction for our church members or even for ourselves.
In recent days, I was chatting with someone who's leading a thriving young adults ministry, a Knoxville church. And it's amazing. And I said, so talk to me about the leaders. How are you discipling the leaders? And he says, you know, on the one hand, they like to hang out at my home the most and chat. On the other hand, they have the hardest time with this little basket that I have by the front door where my wife and I hold it out. And you know where this is going. Yep. And say, would you put your phone or whatever it is you're using in here and be fully present with tonight's meal or conversation or whatever? He said, it is so hard for them to disconnect. So to realize that tension is present, and to realize, I think one of the hardest, most harmful things that most people don't think through is the overwhelmingness that often hits ministry leaders, but especially the senior pastor, to think, you know, okay, now everybody thinks they can reach me. Well, if they don't know my email, they can find my Twitter and try to direct message me or find me on LinkedIn or, you know, somehow find me and message me and there they'll reply. Just like, you know, I can reach out to Tim Tebow and on and just hope that maybe he'll reply to me. So pastors, the amount of time they spend each day processing social media and never getting to the bottom of that email box really requires a whole lot of different leadership strategies. Mm-hmm. I just emailed a pastor yesterday, got the auto reply that said, in essence, my assistant so-and-so processes and sees all these emails, and she will route it to the most appropriate person if it's not me. And if it is me, please be patient. It's going to take me a while to get back, and I might not get back to you. Yeah. You know, I thought, well, I appreciate him being upfront about that and acknowledging that he can't handle it. Now, looking from the other side, one technique that many pastors use is that they have two or three emails. You know, one is the public email that's listed on the website or the bulletin. And then second is kind of the staff and insider. And then if they have a third, it's like, but this is my family email that my wife or husband or, you know, children, they get. And it's limited to an extremely few number of people.
Yeah, that's so healthy. I think of so many pastors who have such a great heart and want to be so available to their congregations that they take advantage of these tools. And the reality of social media is you can minister to anyone, anywhere, at any time. So you can minister to somebody 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the challenge is you can minister to somebody 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You cannot do that in a healthy way. There has to be boundaries, and you have to be disciplined to be able to balance this. And so I think there are opportunities to take advantage of, but I think there are also disciplines that have to be accounted for to make sure you have healthy boundaries to lead well and lead effectively.
Well, Nils, let me use that as a bridge into the How to Break Growth Barriers book, because you know, people think the book is about, oh, it's the understandings of what do you need to do to break 200, 400, 800. Yes, that's the bottom half, last half of the book. And there are certain things you need to learn to grow bigger by getting smaller through groups and the like. But really the first half of the book is about what's in the pastor's head. And this impacts social media in that if you have in your head somehow this message that says, I am to be the primary caregiver to everyone in the congregation versus I am to make sure that everyone in the congregation gets primary care, or I am to be the leader of everyone versus I am to be the leader maker. And if you have somehow this view that I am the one, you will die. Yeah. You will be exhausted. Today, it is impossible to keep up. And especially if you get so saturated with all the kind of incoming mail, so to speak, that your harvest vision gets smaller and smaller because it's like, I can't care for the souls God has already entrusted me. Yep. Well, good. You're not supposed to care for them in that way. I would believe biblically, Ephesians 4:11, that the role of the pastor is to equip the saints to do the work of the ministry. And so... if I'm not training others and if I'm not seeing the harvest out there, then I just become lead an internally focused church and we never do get to the Great Commission.
Yep. Yeah. I still remember being at lunch with Robert Emmett one day and a lady coming up to our table, introducing herself to Robert. And he said, well, are you new to CBC? And she said, no, I've been going for 10 years. I'm actually very involved. I'm a leader in the church. And I remember asking Robert, like, was that embarrassing to not know who that was? And he said, no, it's exhilarating to know that I just met her after 10 years of her going to the church, and our church has ministered to her so effectively that she didn't have to know me, and I didn't have to know her, that we were able to minister her to her in a really unique way. And so that dependency, that lack of dependency on Robert for her spiritual maturity and connection, yet Robert was still able to speak into her life, I think, was so healthy. It's not for everyone, not for every leader, but it was so interesting to watch that connection and that relationship.
Let me carry that one step further. Bill Hybels was in Germany at one of the global leadership things, and volunteers from Willow Creek had come over, and he started chatting with one of them. And he said, well, I guess I'll see you back at South Barrington. That's their original campus. And the lady goes, I don't think so. He goes, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, I'm part of this campus. And, you know, this person is my campus pastor and all that. Yeah. So even though the video teaching is coming in their model to all the different campuses, she relates to a leadership team. She felt supported. She felt cared for. And that's the job of the pastor, to make sure people feel cared for and supported and trained and resourced and challenged, but not to do it all oneself.
I love it. And I think personally, I think that's scalable. Every size level of church, you know, to empower others to lead and empower others to minister in a unique and significant way. Let's shift the conversation a little bit to online campuses. And so I'm very passionate about the subject. Jay and I both are very passionate about the subject. I would say it's still controversial though, where social media is one of those things. I get very little pushback of whether we should use Facebook or not. I get a lot of pushback of online campuses. Are we encouraging people to stop going to church? Are we helping people skip church? Are we helping people to skip, you know, avoid the snow and not shoveling their cars so they could just watch church on TV? What are you seeing in terms of trends around online church? And then I would love to hear your personal thoughts of, do you think this is a good thing? Do you think this is really hindering churches and encouraging laziness within our churches? What are you seeing and what are you perceiving out of that?
Well, you're asking a very widely asked question. In fact, this very day, I am working on a pastor poll survey, and one of the questions is, has the online campus idea been good for the church overall or been harmful? Because, you know, on the one hand, I got a snotty-nosed kid, and I can't make it to church. I shouldn't come to church. You don't want me to come. And isn't it wonderful that I can keep track with the message series and feel like I was in touch a bit and watch it maybe even as a family? That's great. But do I then use that as an excuse? And in talking with different pastors, you hear that the more emphasis they put into making a quality online campus, the more people from the church who go to it instead of as regularly coming online. And, you know, that may speak to, okay, I need to work on the parking problem or the other things that cause it, make it frustrating for people to come in person. Interestingly, giving on online campuses, I consistently hear from pastors, you know, it's a lot higher than we think. And the outreach of, you know, here's this person in China who doesn't have access to church, or someone in Japan who's practicing their English And if somehow the Lord led them to our church and has written us an email to our team that says, I want to learn more about this Jesus. You know, who would have thought that our church, based wherever we are, would have that kind of reach? So there is both positive and negative, and the dust has not settled. But as you pointed out in a recent broadcast of this series, there's a resurgence in online campuses because it's become easier and more people seem to be interested in it.
What would you predict over the next 5 years will happen based on the trends you've seen over the last 5 years?
I think there is a blurring already between, did I talk to that person by text or by phone, or was I there in person? If I have a relationship, then and I've been to churches, it's like, wow, that was great. Well, what's the teaching pastor there in person or online? Or, you know, I forget which, because everything else was personal and relational to me. So I'm going to predict that this will grow, that it will have frustration points, and that churches will, you know, all of whom are on the same page of, we want to form fully devoted, fully developed disciples of Jesus Christ. Yep. And that does involve a relational capacity. You know, 59 times the New Testament, one another's, love one another, yep, encourage one another, bear one another's burdens. And yes, some of that can occur online, but I can't give you a hug on, well, I guess I can give you a hug online nowadays with all the kinds of technologies out there. But nothing replaces that face-to-face, in-person. Yep. And online can come as close as possible, but there will still be tension.
Yep, I agree. And Warren, I would say I feel closer to you having met you face-to-face. You know, I probably knew of you for 5 years before we met face-to-face, but having met you in New York, I feel more connected to you, even though I can see your body language, I can see your expressions right now over Zoom video conferencing.
Well, that's just it.
There's nothing like face-to-face.
We're doing a podcast, but we've both chosen to do this face-to-face just because, and just use the audio track for your podcast, because that makes the connection better. And hey, you couldn't hop a plane today. I couldn't either. So this is great. This is better than nothing. But, you know, if we were at that deli again together, that would be even better.
That's right. I think we all agree on that. And so it's an interesting day, and it will be fun to watch develop. It's hard to have imagined 5 years ago that we'd be where we are today. And I think it's impossible to really understand where technology is going to be in 5 years. And I think there's things we have to continue to wrestle with and have very healthy conversations when it comes to, what does this look like with baptism and with the sacraments, and is this fully a church? Is this healthy? Is this unhealthy? These are great dialogues. I don't think there is a right or a wrong answer in there. These are tensions that I think we're navigating. And so I think, you know, there's folks like Jay and I who are going to try to push the limits on some of that, but there's times where we need to be pushed back on to really consider the long-term effects of some of these directions that we take as a church. And so I'm so excited for where that's going. Warren, I'm so grateful for the leadership you've provided, the insights you provided, the encouragement you've given Jay and I, and me personally. And I value so much the work you do. How can people stay connected to you? Where can they follow you on Twitter, go to your website, things like that?
Twitter is at Warren Bird, or WarrenBird, or at LeadNet, LeadNet, as in Leadership Network. And if you want a free newsletter that covers the trends and resources, including regular promotion of this podcast, go to leadnet.org/update, and that will get you Leadership Network Advance. And the book, How to Break Growth Barriers, April 2017 release, is for churches of all sizes and for larger churches in training people. Not just the techniques of, okay, now I'm at 800, what do I do? But the what's in your head? How big is your harvest vision that would compel you to say, God, would you entrust us to more souls? And how much do you think you need to do it yourself versus the raising up of other leaders? 2 Timothy 2:2 says, train others who train others who train others who train others. And how well are we really doing that?
I love it. I love it. Well, Warren, thank you so much for the time. We have links in the show notes to those websites and those Twitter accounts. We'll be promoting and sharing again as Warren's book releases here in about a month or so. So thanks so much for the time.
Great. Always wonderful to chat with you.